The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Speaking of pantomime villains, Boris Johnson looks set to unilaterally extend the Brexit grace period amid fears over loyalist violence in Northern Ireland. So the Belfast Telegraph are reporting in the last few minutes. Well, James O'Brien is, of course, a presenter on LBC in the UK, and he's author of How Not to Be Wrong, The Art of Changing Your Mind. James, it's good to speak to you. As always.
Always a pleasure.
If we take this at face value, that the reason the grace period is going to be extended is because of fears over loyalist violence, maybe a big if, but if we take it at face value, then a bunch of former paramilitaries dressed up in the clothes of community activism are dictating the terms of a trade deal.
Or at least postponing it. I mean, you're absolutely right. If kicking the can down the road was what they were doing in the Euros at the moment, instead of trying to kick a football into the net, I think England would have already lifted the trophy, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, you say face value. I'm not sure there is any such thing, because once again, this is a tension between facts and feelings. So the facts are that there is no constitutional repercussion to the commercial arrangement. I think Micheál Martin's been very clear on this. There is no threat to the integrity of the UK, but it feels like there is to the people you've just described and to others who probably don't deserve that description, because the notion that the Irish Sea is a sort of mere inconvenience, and that the union is a sort of metaphorical bridge over it, that is compromised by any form of checks on goods moving in either direction. So there is a feeling that there is a constitutional or an integrity issue here, even though the facts, the technical facts, make it quite clear that there isn't. And that is not for the first time in Brexit unravelings, that is almost impossible to legislate. That twain's never going to meet. So I mean, it's quite scary on one level, because you've got no idea what the end game is going to look like. But on the other hand, it was hard to see how else this was going to unfold. The likelihood of a satisfactory resolution has always been low to zero. But because they won't do the SPS deal that would essentially tie them to European Union laws. Unfortunately, as I think cleverer people than me have already observed, sovereignty is not a growth industry. You can't package it, export it, sell it, or promote it. And yet it's sovereignty that Johnson is prioritising over, pragmatism, efficiency? Actually, no, let's go all in. He's prioritising sovereignty over reality.
So is this then, to completely butcher the comparison, is this Boris Johnson needing a pantomime villain, needing the EU to be on the other side?
I think that's part of it domestically, but I also think there's an inevitability to the impasse, given the nonsense about it being an oven-ready deal. I mean, there are so many untruths and embellishments coming home to roost, so many chlorinated chickens potentially coming home to roost, that it's hard to unravel it. You know, they're all sort of, it's a Gordian knot of dissembling dishonesty and delusion. But yeah, it suits him very much to be able to cast the EU still as the enemy, even as it leaves him and David Frost, now Lord Frost, of course, complaining that they almost signed the Northern Ireland Protocol by accident. You know, they negotiated it, they ratified it, they campaigned on it, they got elected arguably on the back of it, and now they're trying to disown it. So who else is going to be the villain if not the other signatories? It is surreal when you think about it, that you're trying to disown something that you owe your power to.
It is. This is maybe an impossible question to answer, and maybe an obvious one. Apologies for it. Why are they trying to disassemble the protocol? Because one of the narratives that emerged after the election was the DUP were now out of office. They were no longer the tail that would wag the dog. Boris Johnson threw them under the bus, because Boris Johnson and the Conservative Party ultimately don't care about Northern Ireland. They don't give a fig about Northern Ireland. Yet everything now has been thrown up in the air because of checks between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. You would swear, looking on this, that, you know, Edwin Poots and everybody else were still, you know, the kingmakers in Westminster.
Well, I think we're back to the tension between facts and feelings. You know, I think it, but beyond the DUP, the whole of the unionist community feels threatened by the introduction of any obstacles in any way, shape, or form, whether they're commercial or, you know, for goods or for people between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. So he is aware of that. The marching season is almost upon us, which will become a flare point. And I guess the avoidance of blame, as ever, will be a crucial priority. Him saying, yeah, some awful things are happening in Northern Ireland. No, but that then brackets the bit he doesn't say out loud as a direct consequence of A, things I told you would never happen, and B, things that I actually made happen, close brackets. But it's not my fault. It's government by Shaggy. It's never, ever Boris Johnson. It wasn't me. Could be his anthem. And so we're still trying to apply logic, you and I, to a situation that doesn't actually admit logic. And I know that sounds like a cop-out, but if you think about the biggest decisions you've made in your life, they've had as much to do with feelings and emotions as they have with facts. I think I certainly made a mistake previously of sounding a bit patronizing when you say, well, you're putting your feelings ahead of your facts. I don't share the feelings of the unionist community, quite the opposite, but they are real and they are deadly, as we know. So he's going to have to try and pour oil on the water while blaming the turbulence on other people.
Well, one of the criticisms that was made of the DUP while they were propping up Theresa May's government is that they were master tacticians, but they were terrible strategists.
And it
does strike me that the exact same thing could now be said about Boris Johnson's government, unless there is a master plan that, you know, he's kept well secret.
I started calling it, I think I told you before, the flesh-coloured body stocking, because you're so convinced that the emperor is naked. And yet so many people are still behaving as if he isn't naked that you begin to wonder whether it's your eyesight that's dodgy and he is actually wearing a flesh-coloured body stocking after all. I mean, what would the master plan involve? It would involve, I think, if it's going to be a resolution that Johnson wouldn't have to carry the can for, it would involve either the European Union rolling over completely and saying, oh, sure, we never expected you to abide by the terms of the international treaty that you signed and we spent so long negotiating. Macron was very persuasive this week, a perspective you never really think of when you're in England. Macron explaining how much time and energy they've had to put into negotiating this thing at a time when every remaining member of the European Union would much rather have got on with a million other, arguably from their point of view, much more important things. So I guess you're either going to see them roll over completely, or, and this is tinfoil hat territory, I think, Kieran, but or they're kind of pushing the European Union into a position where a border on the island of Ireland becomes a possibility and the fault of the European Union, most obviously, and of course then the Republic of Ireland by association. And the narrative would be, I sometimes wonder whether people who aren't reading the London press every day realise how mad it's become, because the narrative would be, this is something that they are doing to us. And again, the bit you don't say out loud is as a direct result of a stupid vote that we undertook in this country in 2016.
When you mentioned Macron, was there genuine surprise from the British government as to the reception Boris Johnson got at the G7?
I don't know. I mean, I guess that it works at home. The whole act works at home and it continues to work exceedingly well. Those of us waiting for scales to fall from the nation's eyes, I think, would do well not to hold our breath. So it still works extremely well.
Sorry to interrupt. Maybe this is a question we don't ask often enough. Why is it working so well at home?
There's a cult involved, clearly a kind of personality cult where he is perceived. And I speak as someone who actually fell for it in 2008. I voted for him to be mayor of London because he made me laugh and he seems quite jolly. And it really is that simple. And of course, he then does this sort of Churchillian tribute act, which for proper scholars of Churchill is laughable, but of course most of us aren't proper scholars of Churchill, so just sort of portraying Johnny Foreigner as being perpetually dedicated to the erosion of UK interests plays very, very well with a much larger constituency than perhaps many people previously credited. So that works really, really well domestically. it's not true. It is not built upon reality. The entire Vote Leave government is built upon foundation stones of demonstrable falsehoods, falsehoods that have now been shown to be falsehoods, whether it's the border in the Irish Sea, whether it's frictionless trade, whether it's the status of European Union citizens in the UK. I could go on, and as you know, I frequently do. So none of that is in play when people like Macron and Merkel turn up, and Joe Biden, none of that's in play. It doesn't, there's not a single parsnip that is buttered by Boris Johnson's alleged bonhomie and his alleged humour. They're not technocrats. They're just utterly immune to English jingoism. And English jingoism, very, very sadly, is the kind of lead in Boris Johnson's pencil.
That's the great Chinese finger trap of the cult, isn't it? Is that the more Macron or Biden or anybody else criticises him, the stronger the power of the cult becomes.
Bingo. And the further, of course, we drift from objective reality and objective truth. And we've seen in America this year how catastrophic for a country, for democracy, for established norms that drift from reality when it's necessitated by a regime being built on balderdash. I mean, one worries, try not to think about it too much, because you worry about where it might end. It ends either in an acknowledgement of reality, in which case the whole thing falls apart, or it ends with a sort of implosion, because the outside pressure of reality has become unbearable for the regime to sustain. And I kind of find myself really, really hoping there's a third option that I haven't been able to identify yet, because both of those are genuinely frightening.
Where do you think it ends?
I mean, there's a question. I imagine that, the catastrophes aside, there'll be some sort of fudge eventually on checks. They'll do checks and try to sell to the unionist community the idea that they're not really checks. And it will be have to be something that satisfies the integrity of the single market, which is where I hesitate to put any money on this prediction, but it's the best I've got. And which, I mean, that's it, isn't it? The European Union have to feel that the integrity of the single market is being protected, and the unionist community has to somehow feel unthreatened by a change to the status quo. And Johnson's track record, I suppose, if you could give him credit for anything, he's very good at pulling the wool over people's eyes. So best case scenario is that he sells another pup to the unionists.
Before I let you go, have you got a favourite soap baddie?
Have I got a favourite soap baddie? Who was the one that pushed Rita under the tram in Coronation Street?
Oh, was that Richard Hillman?
No, Richard. I think Richard Hill went for Gail Tilsley. I think it was Alan Bradley.
There we
Alan
are.
Was that right? I don't know.
someone will text in and correct you if you're wrong.
I look forward to it.
That's the beauty of it. James, a pleasure as always, and we'll talk to you again soon. James O'Brien, presenter on LBC, of course, and he's author of How Not to Be Wrong, The Art of Changing Your Mind, in all good bookshops, and all of those good bookshops, they are open.